Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November 1st, 2013, and it's World Vegan Day. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Jenny Rempel.
Hello.
Hey, Jenny, and Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
Alyssa, Jackie, and Tim are away today. Welcome, everyone, and happy World Vegan Day to you. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org. Our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. On today's special show for World Vegan Day, we have two information-packed interviews for you. First, we'll be speaking with registered dietitian Vicento Molina to answer some of our vegan nutrition questions. If you're familiar at all with the most sound literature available on plant-based nutrition, then Vicento's name will be very familiar to you as she has co-authored over 8 books in this domain and has most recently written the updated Express edition of the Vegan Nutrition Bible, Becoming Vegan. So we have 15 precious minutes to spend with her to find out about some of the updated info on nutrition in her new book, and we'll be getting her take on topics such as veganism and disease prevention, consuming oils, and the paleo diet. And for our feature interview today, we have vegan ultra marathoner Matt Frazier to speak with us about veganism and athleticism. He is the author of the popular blog website called NoMeatAthlete.com, and he has just authored a book called No Meat Athlete, Run on Plants and Discover Your Fittest, Fastest, and Happiest Self. I've been reading his book and his website this past week, and there is such an abundance of information in both, all kinds of fantastic nutritional advice for athletes and non-athletes alike who are interested in switching to a plant-based diet. And we are fortunate to have him here with us today to share with us a sampling of easy-to-digest information that can be found in his writings. He communicates in a really clear, simple, and straightforward manner, and I think this communication style is part of what has driven the success of his website, not to mention the plethora of info contained on it. So that interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, but first, today is the last day of our co-op fall member drive.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. I wanted to kind of share my personal story and what Animal Voices and Co-op Radio mean to me and why I think it's really important that people support Co-op Radio by making a pledge and joining and becoming a member today. So I wanted to talk about how I got involved in Animal Voices. Last year at our Thanksgiving potluck, I was one of the performers. We had a little variety show there and I had the opportunity to perform. And after the show, I learned a lot about the radio program because I wasn't very aware of Animal Voices before that. But it's really given me a great opportunity being on the show to fulfill my dream of being on the radio. I've been able to sing on our show. Last Christmas, we all did a song together. And it's also great exposure for local artists, international issues, and things that are important to the members of the Vancouver community. So I'm also really glad that we actually have an animal rights themed radio show here in British Columbia and in the Vancouver area. There are lots of places and radio stations that don't offer any programming or content related to that. So I'm really happy that our voice has a chance to be represented and we have this opportunity to share information with our many listeners. Last week I was talking with a friend who listened to the show and they told me they had no idea about some of the issues we had covered and that they found our program very informative. So this is a really great opportunity to reach out to people and share information. And I've also heard of some people that have actually become vegan because of information that they've learned listening to our program. So I think it's really important that we keep doing this work and we really can't buy that type of impact. So I think that Animal Voices specifically is really having a great impact on our community, and Co-op Radio as a whole is all listener run and volunteer run and ad free. So I think that's a really special opportunity that we have, and it would be really great to keep that going. So to support Co-op Radio, you can call now at 604-684-8494 or visit us online at cooperadio.org. I'll be here on the phones ready to take your call. So if you want to chat with me about my experiences on Animal Voices or vegan questions or other
maybe
fun
Jenny
stuff.
Will sing you a song.
I was just gonna say, I will Cynthia serenade was you. Answering nutrition questions last week, and Jenny will sing a little ditty. You even write songs. I will improvise a song for you. You
composed
a song for our Thanksgiving event on how people should go to their tables, right? Or go and get food. That was awesome.
That was super fun.
Yeah.
So I would love to do that for you if you would call us now at 604-684-8494. I will personally serenade you with your own special song.
Yeah.
It's also important to mention that your membership donation can be for any amount. We're happy to provide flexible payment options, such as our sustaining membership option. This is where you pre-authorize a small donation each month that is recurring, so you don't even notice it. You can do as little as like even $5 a month.
That's what I do. It comes up to a standard membership of $60 a year, and you know, I barely even notice it. It just comes out $5.
And it's easy. All automatic, pretty easy to deal with.
And the nice thing about that is that you don't have to then, we don't have to bug you every year to ask you to renew. We do need this, you know, this steady income to keep the show on the air. We have to raise $1,000 every year. So having that little bit, knowing that it's going to be coming in on a constant basis, that's really helpful for us.
And also, any donation over $25 earns you a tax receipt, so that's another great reason to donate. You can donate just from yourself, or if you have an organization or business, you can get an organizational or business membership to Co-op Radio and donate that way. So it's really a great opportunity, especially with tax season coming up. So I just wanted to inform everyone once again that you're listening to the Animal Voices show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio. We're all volunteer and listener run. You can call us at 604-684-8494 to make your donation.
And if you're shy, just go on to co-opradio.org and make a donation that
and
way.
Make sure you pick Animal Voices as your favorite show, because obviously it's your favorite show.
Exactly. Yeah, specify Animal Voices on your donation.
And it'll go towards us.
You can even get a shout out on the radio. So if you want your name read on air. And again, I will serenade you if you call us now at 604-684-8494.
Thanks for that, Jenny.
Awesome. So I have our armchair activist tip of the week. So our tip this week is Google Alerts. You can set up a Google Alert that'll come to your email weekly or daily, and you can set up for anything. I have two. I have one that's animal rights and vegan. So every week I get an animal rights Google Alert, and every day I get a vegan Google Alert.
And that's interesting, because when we first chatted about this months and months ago, I have the same alerts.
I know.
I actually set those up when I was an intern for Mercy for Animals in New York.
This year.
To follow it. But for those of you that aren't aware, Google Alerts follows news broadcasts and news stories that are put out on the internet. So it sends you an email digest update of stories that have been published using the keywords you enter. So you can get stories about veganism or animal rights or other words.
You can get it sent to you once a week or once a day. Mm-hmm. That's right, I think.
I have both. And it's great, because oftentimes my animal rights one will find me stories that I didn't see on Facebook or on my regular podcast or things I listen to. So it's great.
What do you do with this information, Cynthia?
Well, I use it on the Animal Voices radio show for my news updates, but there's also petitions you can sign. There's ways you can get involved. There's events. There's lots of things that keep you in the know what's going on in the animal rights and vegan community. And the great part is there's recipes. My vegan alert, I use a lot for recipes. I get a lot of yummy recipes.
I had to stop that. There was too many recipes.
Oh,
couldn't
I know.
Handle it.
I know. I sent my sister one that was showed up the other day for a grilled eggplant sandwich, because I know she's really into grilled eggplant. So, yeah. But more specifically too, in being an activist, what you can do with this info is post it online through your social media, and that's what I do. You know, kind of being connected with a lot of the animal rights community, I get a lot of this stuff already in my Facebook, for example. I'm not on Twitter too much, but when I do see a story, sometimes I'm the one to break it. And because
it's a good feeling when that happens.
It is. So, but just to know that you're getting info out there, not just within sort of your own social network of other animal rights activists who will create a snowball effect and pass it on to all of their social network people, but just amongst your regular friends, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for that.
No worries.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
Tear away, tear change.
Welcome back to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. As part of our membership drive, you can call us at 604-684-8494 to make a donation or pledge, and I will sing you a special song dedicated to you if you call now.
So that's official now. You get a song from Jenny. That's great.
It's official. I wanted to share some events with everyone. The film Free Birds, starring vegan actor Woody Harrelson, is premiering tonight. It's about two turkeys from opposite side of the tracks, and they have to put aside their differences and team up to travel back in time to change the course of history and get turkeys off the holiday menu for good. Whoa, mind blown.
It's
going to be amazing.
It's an amazing concept. It's a mainstream film.
Yeah. And it's talking about animal issues. So it's a great opportunity to leaflet and do outreach. So you can head to your local theater, bring your family and friends, and spread the word. Great talking piece. Also in connection with the film, for their November volunteer event, Liberation BC will be meeting from 1:30 to 2:30 to hand out turkey leaflets outside the Cineplex Odeon International Village Theater in Vancouver. So you can meet them at 1:30 p.m. on the Starbucks at the corner of Kiefer and Abbott. So that's a great event to head out to. Another event upcoming this week is the Vancouver Animal Defense League protest against Brooklyn Clothing Company. It's the first anti-fur protest of the season. So to get more information and details on that, you can visit facebook.com/Vancouver Animal Defense League, and that will be happening on Wednesday, November 6th. Following that, on November 12th, that's a Tuesday, Gray's Restaurant at 3980 Fraser Street is having a fundraiser for Mercy for Animals Canada, who we actually featured on the show last week. You can check out that interview
on
our website, animalvoices.org. So Gray's Restaurant is generously donating 20% of the revenue from every table reserved for Mercy for Animals Canada. So to make a reservation, call them at 604-620-8822. Make sure to mention Mercy for Animals Canada. If you have any questions, you can contact Jason at westcoastcoordinator@mercyforanimals.ca or visit graysrestaurant.ca. And if you're going to call them and reserve, you could also call us at 604-684-8494 to make a donation.
You're on the phone anyways. Good segue there, Jenny.
Here are some reoccurring events that are going to be happening for a while. Tattoo Zoo, which is BC's all-vegan tattoo parlor, is having their 10th anniversary. So they're giving away prizes to everyone who gets a cruelty-free tattoo this month every Friday from noon to 9 p.m. They have a special where you can pull a design out of box and pay $80 for it. They're located in Victoria at 1215 Wharf Street, and you can also check them out online at tattoozoo.net. But everyone who gets a tattoo gets a prize.
So that's to say, if I went there, the tattoo I might pull out might be a big skull and crossbones that I'd be then obligated to get. Is that the deal here?
You could choose not to pay for it and not a tattoo, or you could pay $80 and get it.
Oh,
or you can pay $10 more and choose another design if you're not happy with the first one. But they've got a whole variety of options in that box, apparently.
Just wanted to clarify there.
Important to know. Some other reoccurring events. We have the Chicken Vigils, which happen every Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street, which is outside of the storage facility and slaughterhouse where many chickens are murdered each week. So please show up from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Fridays to take part in that. And another weekly event, also on Fridays, the Vancouver Animal Defense League is protesting at Sun Chu Hua Seafood Restaurant. They've been there for 7 months now, and they're going to continue to campaign until the restaurant removes shark fin from their menu. So join them Friday nights from 6:30 to 8:30 at 3888 Main Street to protest the threat of and extinction this poses to the shark species because of the shark fin trade. Lastly, the Campaign Against Cruelty to Animals, that's CACHA. They're a local group, and they're having an online auction fundraiser. You can go to their website at cachahelpanimals.org/100, and you can see current listings of items you can make your bid on to support the work of CACHA, Campaigns Against Cruelty to Animals.
Thanks for those events. For our first interview for World Vegan Day, we have renowned registered dietitian Vicento Molina with us. She has co-written the classics in vegan nutrition, also with fellow RD Brenna Davis, with over 650,000 copies of their books in print in 8 languages. These include the books Becoming Vegetarian, Becoming Vegan, Becoming Raw, The Raw Food Revolution Diet, Cooking Vegan, and Raising Vegetarian Children. Vicento has taught nutrition courses at the University University level. She has received the ClinTech Award for Leadership in Dietetics, and she was a co-author of the American Dietetic Association's and Dietitians of Canada's joint 2003 position paper on vegetarian diets. Most recently, written with colleague Brenda Davis, Vicento has authored the newly published Becoming Vegan Express Edition, The Everyday Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition, which has star rating by the American Library Association and is listed as the go-to book on vegan nutrition. Vicento is here today to answer some of our vegan nutrition questions. Hello, Vicento, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, and happy World Vegan Day to you.
Hi.
It's so good to hear your voice again. So thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about your area of expertise, that is vegan nutrition. Your new book, Becoming Vegan Express Edition, has just come out. And I know from reading the original Becoming Vegan book years ago that I consider it to be my Bible, an official informational resource when it comes to knowing everything there is to know on the topic of vegan nutrition. So please do tell us, what is new to know in this updated version of the book?
Well, that classic Becoming Vegan was very, very popular. It's in a number of languages now. And it gave solid information, still accurate, but it's a very lively field of research. There have been changes in our understanding of protein metabolism, even. There was a huge protein conference in New Zealand, and there are changes in the way we advocate raising children, like what foods you start with for babies, and just the ways people are doing things are different. We have a lot of new products on the market, a lot more fortification than there was, many items available, and so we've just gone through the research. We hire UBC students and have often like 1,200 nutrition research papers from the peer-reviewed literature and just go through them, scour them, and then put together some reader-friendly information. That's what we've done.
Well, I can't wait to read it myself. I actually just got it in the mail yesterday, but I'm going to devour this book just as I did with the original edition. So I just encourage all of our listeners, if you want sound nutritional advice on how to become vegan and how to do it nutritionally wise, read this book. So to speak about the vegan lifestyle and health, can you tell us about some of the studies that have been done on showing health advantages of a vegan diet, such as the mortality rate of vegans and vegetarians as compared to meat eaters?
Okay. Well, there are some really big studies that are done. The Adventist health studies that have been done since decades ago, they've had a new branch of that. The Adventist II health study began in 2002. And they have, for example, 96,000 participants. And these are people on pretty healthy lifestyles. They don't smoke or drink, typically drink coffee even, because they're mostly Adventists. But some of them eat meat and some don't. And there's another group in Oxford, the Epic Oxford Studies, 56,000 people. Again, they were comparing health-conscious meat eaters. And so, you know, people that are eating meat, but the rest of their diet's pretty healthy, and they only eat a little bit, often just once a month or something, they're still finding there are huge advantages to being vegan. We find that the mortality rate is reduced by about 15%. That means you take longer to die. It doesn't mean that you don't die.
Of course. But,
yeah. Anyway, they have a 28% lower risk of cardiovascular disease. And that's when you control for all the variables like body fatness. They have lower risk of cancer, way lower risk of hypertension, type 2 diabetes, less cataracts, kidney disease, diverticular disease, rheumatoid arthritis, endocrine disorders, and constipation, of course, because there's more fiber. So it's quite a change. And these are comparing the really health-conscious people who are consuming meat and fish.
Well, moving on to another topic here, what is your opinion on nutritional supplements? Should vegans be taking them, and if so, for which nutrients? And please do talk to us about why vitamin D and B12 are not so easy to get in plant-based diets.
Okay, well, vitamin B12 comes from bacteria. Now, that's perfectly easily a vegan option for getting it, but it's in animal products because of the bacterial origin. In plant foods that are pretty clean, you don't get vitamin B12. Like we clean our plants off, and they end up not having vitamin B12 in them. But we can get the same bacteria origin vitamin B12 from supplements. And so that's what vegans should do, or even people who are near vegan, because there's not that much in eggs and dairy. So you definitely need to have a source of vitamin B12, and that means either taking a daily supplement that has about 25 micrograms of B12, or two or three times a week taking 1,000 micrograms, or else using fortified foods. Some of the breakfast cereals, the non-dairy milks, the nutritional yeast is fortified. Although the amounts can be a bit variable, so it's good to take a supplement once in a while. And then for vitamin D, well, it's not just vegans who need vitamin D in Canada.
Right.
It's pretty well everybody. And I was quite surprised myself to have gone to Italy and Hawaii one winter. I was speaking in all these lovely locations and had 5 weeks in sunny climates, and still my vitamin D was low in February. So it was pretty much a wake-up call. Hey, we do need supplements in Canada. And especially as we get older, as I am, compared to a 25-year-old, my vitamin D production is much lower. So vitamin D, Canadians need it. On average, Canadians are at the lower end of the optimal range, the normal range.
Interestingly,
and so that means taking some the official recommendation, 600 international units. But a lot of health experts tell us to get more than that.
I went to my doctor recently to ask for a blood work requisition, and I said, I want my vitamin D checked. And he said, oh, we don't check for that here because everyone's depleted in it.
That's right. And there is a place, I think it's in our book, the Vitamin D Council, I think. It's in California. People can pay for their own vitamin D because I think the medical system just found out they'd go broke if everybody who asked for a vitamin D checkup. Got it, but you can just do your own, have your own arranged, and that's smart to do. Or else, just realize from October to April, you're not going to be making vitamin D when you're in Canada, and probably in the summer you may not make enough. So just get a supplement, and then you don't even need
covered.
To pay for the test. You can just assume that if you're in Canada, you're above the 37th degree north latitude, just take vitamin D.
Just an update on the test here, too. I recently had mine done in the summer, and it cost me an extra $50. The regular blood test was covered by the medical plan, but the rest wasn't. So if you're in British Columbia, that's the state of affairs.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, I had to talk to my doctor, too, and because I was vegan and was checking out some bone issues, they let me put it through. But I had to really talk. And I realized this is not going to be something that would happen easily or the next time I tried.
So I'd like to talk about the paleo diet, a little bit of a controversial subject here for people who are paleo versus those who follow a vegan diet, but maybe it doesn't have to be so. It's a diet that's supposed to mimic the food consumption of our ancestors in Paleolithic times, and it's been a popular fad in recent years among those seeking optimal nutrition. Can you talk to us about your opinion on whether today's paleo diet, as people are following it, may serve us nutritionally or not?
Well, what paleo people are eating today is really quite funny, and it's sure a far cry from what paleo people really ate. You know, people are eating grass-fed cows that stand around in some little pot, and they often have a latte once in a while in between, and they don't eat the whole animal, the guts, and every part of the body, and even the plant foods they eat are entirely different. People, when they eat meat, they used to eat meat that was running away from them like crazy, and so it was very, very lean, like a tenth of fat content. What people are eating today, they buy in the supermarket in a little styrofoam package, is quite, quite different meat. The fruits and vegetables are also very different because today it isn't genetically modified, but it's been bred to get much sweeter fruit, less high mineral vegetables and fruit. It's lower in mineral content. So it's quite different nutrition. I mean, people then spent all day wandering around getting some leaves off something and some berries and dried berries in the winter. And actually, they ate so much plant foods that 2,000 calories of their intake would have been plant foods. And their fiber content was about 1,000 grams compared to today's, like, 20. On a paleo diet, it would be maybe 10, 15, 20, somewhere like that, today's paleo. But on the real paleo, it was 100. And so it turns out that the vegan diet is way closer to a paleo diet. And the paleo diet of the past was high in a lot of vitamins, so is the vegan diet. So what we're finding that the new paleo is a very poor attempt at imitating the diet of early man. And it also completely ignores environmental issues, which should indicate that we need to eat lower on the food chain. It avoids ecological ideas, ethical issues associated with animal slaughter, and there are numerous health risks involved in just eating all that meat, huge piles of meat and vegetables and fruit. Vegetables and fruit parts, good.
So what advice would you give to people who they've found out about the paleo diet? Maybe they don't really know about the vegan diet and they want to give it a try as it's being touted now in modern day society. What would you say to a person like that?
Well, the vegetable and fruit part is a really good idea, and it's wise to do that. A lot of times where people feel better is because they give up the sugar, the refined carbohydrates, but it's good to go. You're not going to be eating the same type of meat that people ate then anyway. It's far better ethically from an animal perspective, even from a health perspective by a long shot, to eat legumes plus the vegetables and fruit. You do really well. And we do need a little bit of carbs. You can get that from carrots and zucchini. You can get it from quinoa, buckwheat, that kind of thing. And so you can have we put together in our Becoming Vegan Express edition a really good idea about how to do a healthy diet that was similar but vegan style.
Yeah, that's another great reason to get a hold of that book. We have time for one more last question here. You have written the classics in vegan and vegetarian nutrition since 1993. Now, 20 years later, how have you seen the public perception on vegan diets change throughout the years? And do you find it's becoming a more accepted diet now to follow and encourage among your professional colleagues, such as other dietitians and doctors? Are they encouraging that people follow vegan diets?
They are. You go to all sorts of different restaurants. They know what you mean by vegan. They will find some good vegan food for you. We find among health professionals there's actual enthusiasm. The position papers, the one that came out in 2009, says that a vegan diet is a healthy choice and can lower your risk of chronic disease. That's from dietitians across North America. Last winter, I was invited to do a cross-Canada tour for dietitians by Dietitians of Canada. So whereas they looked at things rather skeptically 20 years ago, now we're Brenda Davis, my co-author on Becoming Vegan Express Edition, we're asked for advice, we're hired as consultants, we're speaking to large groups of health professionals, dietitians, doctors. We find that this is wonderfully well accepted. I mean, people need to know how to do it well, and that's why in the Becoming Vegan Express edition, we give people really clear guidelines. But you can do it well, and you can have a great time. And, oh, there's another book, Cooking Vegetarian, mm-hmm. With HarperCollins that's just come out, which is actually all vegan. And there are terrific recipes in that. I did that with Chef Joseph Forrest. And so people can have really good food as well.
Well, thank you, Vasanto, for coming on today's special World Vegan Day show to share with us just a glimpse of your knowledge on nutrition for vegan diets. For more information on Vasanto's work, you can visit her website, NutriSpeak.com, or please do go to the Becoming Vegan book website at becomingvegan.ca. Thanks so much, Vasanto, and have a good day.
Oh, thanks, Allison.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. And now I'm going to get into some news. So yesterday was Halloween, and I have an interesting Halloween story. So a supermarket chain apologizes after selling severed hands for Halloween. So grocery store Halloween prank on selling fake severed hands and feet along its regular meat backfired as parents threatened to boycott the chain. Europris, which has outlets across Norway, so this happened in Europe, was forced to apologize after the gruesome stunt left hundreds of kids terrified and in tears. The plastic shrimp rack body parts were being sold in the butcher's tray as part of the firm's Halloween's collection. But customers failed to see the funny side when they went to pick up their meat. Instead, they were shocked to spot the realistic-looking flesh placed nearby. And here's a few statements from some shoppers. "I think it's a shame we have American traditions so violently forced down our throats." Another shopper said, "Don't we have enough violence in this country without these kinds of crazy people bringing such things into shops?" The supermarket apologized and profusely apologized and took away the severed hands. So what do we think about that?
I think that's pretty funny that it's interesting. I think Melanie Joy in her writing, you can visit her online at carnism.org. She talks a lot about cognitive dissonance. People don't always connect the suffering of animals to other forms of oppression that we are more able to spot and identify.
Exactly. Because, I mean, the hands were fake. They were just plastic severed hands. I saw them. They looked a little bit real, but, I mean, they were next to real flesh of
things like that
animals.
Just drive me crazy. That's all I can say.
Thank you for that comment. So moving on, Pet Expo at Blue Water Shopping Center has been criticized after pictures emerged of a bow tie wearing raccoon riding a miniature bicycle. The image was posted on Twitter by a concerned animal activist. Her name was at Aura Bites, who questioned the show's theme and responsibility. The RSPCA got involved and branded the stunt demeaning and irresponsible. The RSPCA said it was shocked to learn that the raccoon was made to wear a bow tie and ride a bicycle this weekend, and it fears it encourages others to host a similarly irresponsible show in the lead up to Christmas. The event occurred as part of a pet expo, which aimed to promote responsible pet ownership and animal welfare. But the animal welfare organization strongly disagrees that this aim has been achieved by an animal performing such a circus-style stunt. They also said, "We have a vet at the show at all times who checks many of the animals coming into the show, as well as an animal welfare officer." So I'm not too sure what this animal welfare officer
was doing. I always find that kind of statement and reply to be a real cop-out. And interestingly enough, a friend of mine who lives in England wrote an open letter to the organizers of this event, and they replied back to her and kind of said the same thing. "Oh, we've got an event," but they said, "but there are no plans to have this pet expo again in the future." So that kind of, to me, says that maybe they won't be doing it again.
That's great. And so I'm glad that people, so there you go. Send your letters, get involved. People actually listen when we do something about it.
Exactly.
So moving forward, a Sea Shepherd captain, founder Paul Watson, who's been entangled in a legal mess with Costa Rica since May 2012, said on Thursday that Interpol red alert ordered by Costa Rica against him has been dropped. Costa Rica, however, denied the claim, saying Watson is still wanted by Costa Rican officials. And they said, "Everything continues as was," a judicial branch woman said. "Watson remains active, and the moment he is arrested in another country, we'll request his extradition." However, Watson posted to his Facebook, "I have returned to the United States. The Interpol red notice from Costa Rica has been dropped. I will challenge the Japan notice in U.S. if required. We carry on with our efforts to save the oceans undeterred and undaunted." So Watson arrived in L.A., California on Monday after 15 months at sea. He passed through customs and was not arrested.
For those who aren't aware, Captain Paul Watson is from Sea Shepherd, and they do some kind of direct action campaigns in the ocean to actually prevent, like, whaling and hunting against animals in the ocean. So they physically try and stop those efforts from taking place.
And he's been in hiding for about the last 2 years.
Yeah,
so,
and that Costa Rica, the Costa Rican event of what happened can be seen in Sharkwater. So watch that movie to see what happened there.
Thanks so much for the news, Cynthia. For our feature interview today for World Vegan Day, we have vegan ultra marathon marathoner and ultra runner Matt Frazier on the show. Matt is the founder of the website nomeatathlete.com. It's a 20,000 plus subscriber blog about plant-based nutrition and fitness, and he is also the author of a brand new book entitled No Meat Athlete: Run on Plants and Discover Your Fittest, Fastest, Happiest Self. Like the website, this book serves as a fitness guide, healthy living cookbook, and nutrition primer for the beginner and everyday athlete who wants to enjoy the health benefits of a plant-based lifestyle. Matt is here today to speak with us about veganism for athleticism and how to go vegan for beginners. Hi, Matt, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on the show today on World Vegan Day to speak with us on how to be a no-meat athlete and specifically about making the transition to a plant-based diet, whether you are a seasoned athlete or not an athlete at all. I've been reading your book this past week, and I think it's a really useful guide for people who are delving into the world of a plant-based lifestyle for the very first time, especially for those who identify as being athletes and for whom the concept of eating plant-based for athleticism is totally foreign. It hasn't yet penetrated the mainstream as much as I think it will in the near future. First, I wanted to ask you if you could share your story of your transition to a vegan lifestyle. You didn't do it overnight, and in fact, it took two tries. So how did this transition all begin for you, Matt?
Well, I was a marathoner. I had started running marathons in college really just for fun and to kind of, you know, thought it would help me lose fat. I was really into fitness and had gotten bit by this sort of bug, you know, to qualify for the Boston Marathon, which was would have taken a 3-hour and 10-minute marathon, and my first marathon was a 4:53, so I was 103 minutes shy of what I wanted, where I wanted to be. So for the next 7 years, I really was focused on getting faster as a runner, and I made some good progress. But about 5 years into it, I started to basically stop feeling right about eating animals entirely for ethical reasons, and you know, wanted first just gave it a try, and within a week or so, just failed, gave up, went back to eating meat, and it was really stuck in my head this idea that it just wouldn't work as an athlete. I had studied plant-based nutrition. I mean, not plant-based. I had studied nutrition for marathon running, and just didn't see how you could possibly get what you wanted on a vegan or vegetarian diet. I wasn't really educated that there were lots of people out there who were doing it. Anyway. I spent the next few years just sort of in an in-between state. I had cut out just cows and pigs, stopped eating those, but finally plateaued and just wasn't making any progress towards Boston. So finally I went the whole way thinking, you know, what do I have to lose at this point? And I was shocked when 6 months after that, I took the last 10 minutes off my marathon and qualified for Boston.
You talk about this story in your book, and I just really like how you just share, it's your story, but I think a lot of other people can really relate. And you had these serious nutritional concerns, you were saying, because you were running 50 to 60 miles every week. Your concerns were that how could you ever replenish your diet and take in enough calories to recover from these really long runs? And can you talk to us about how these concerns were addressed? How do you get all of your nutritional requirements? Was it something that was difficult to achieve, or is it something that is fairly straightforward as long as you sort of do a little bit of research? What advice would you give to others that are sort of in your same kind of boat where other athletes are worried that they're not going to be able to get enough nutrients and calories to support their athletic activities?
Well, the biggest thing that I didn't realize when I, you know, was under the same impression as everybody else, I thought you can't get enough protein, you can't get enough calories, you can't be right. A serious athlete as a vegetarian. And this is before even thinking about vegan, which was several years later. What I didn't understand at the time, though, was that the nutrient density of plant foods, that they have far more nutrients per calorie than most animal products do, that meant you could get, you know, just even if you were eating fewer calories, which isn't necessarily the case, but with fewer calories, you can get the same amount of most of the vitamins and minerals and nutrients that you need in a way that actually, you know, is somewhat lighter on your system because it's fewer calories. So one of the great benefits for me was that I lost about 5 pounds within the first 2 weeks of transitioning to going vegetarian, and that had a huge impact. I mean, that alone, because I didn't lose any strength in the process, which was really great, losing 5 and eventually it's totaled about 7 pounds by after a month or two and leveled off right there. That made an enormous difference over the, you know, how hard it was to run 26.2 miles. I mean, having your body carry that much less weight, makes a big difference. So what I found was that as I transitioned away from, like, I was eating chicken breast and brown rice, but that was my everyday meal. Maybe pasta, every once in a while, like steak with it. When I got away from that and actually started incorporating tons of fresh, raw, whole vegetables and fruits, it was just like a new world was opened up, and I was getting, I think, so much more nutrition than I had never really gotten just from eating. Though I was hitting the protein, carbohydrate, and fat numbers before, I wasn't even thinking about all the other nutrients, the micronutrients, the phytonutrients, the anti-inflammatory compounds in plant foods, just was ignoring that. So even without worrying too much about protein numbers, and I really didn't ever focus too much on numbers, the switch to plant-based, it just helped. Everything really just fell into place after that.
So why would you say plant-based diets are not only ideal but superior to meat-based diets when it comes to athletic performance? And I'll ask you a question that you pose yourself in your book. Will adopting a plant-based diet make you stronger, faster, and fitter?
Sure. I think there are a few benefits. The first one is what I mentioned, that you naturally do lose some weight, or some people do. I think a typical athlete eating the athlete diet that I was, which is lots of starch, lots of meat, very few vegetables, will find that they lose some weight pretty quickly. And that will make a big difference if you're doing it in the correct and you're eating whole foods and you're still getting the nutrition you need but with fewer calories. That'll make a big difference in your running speed right away. The second one is that recovery times, this is not just from my experience, but whenever I've had the pleasure of talking to someone like Brendan Brazier or Rich Roll or Scott Jurek or Hilary Biscay, these are, you know, elite athletes who choose this diet largely for performance reasons. What they say, the number one benefit to being a plant-based athlete is that you can recover faster than you can with an omnivorous diet. And I haven't seen any, you know, science saying this is precisely the reason why, but I believe the anti-inflammatory properties of plant foods are one reason. And I believe that because when you go plant-based, you if you're doing it correctly, you eat a much wider variety of foods. You start bringing in all these different plants. So it's not really a taking away of the meat and dairy as much as a bringing in of so many new fruits and vegetables. And when you do that, you're safeguarding yourself against a lot of deficiency because you have such a wide basket of foods, you know, that are making up your diet now than just a few. And finally, there's a digestion issue. Digestion takes a ton of energy up, a very, very large portion of our energy. And when you're working out hard, you need as much energy as possible to be allocated towards rebuilding your muscles and repairing you and getting ready for the next workout. So if you can lighten the digestive load, which eating plant-based does, then you free up a lot of energy to be used to get you recovered quicker than you could otherwise.
So for people who are just sort of new to listen to this kind of information on our show, we've covered it many times before, but if you could just say a few words about protein needs, what would you have to say to a total newbie who's but like, how do I get my protein? What would you say to them?
Right. I would say the protein thing is so overblown. You really just don't need an extreme amount of protein. Again, the athletes who I talked to have had a chance to interview and ask about their diets. They generally get between 13 and 15% of their calories from protein. This amounts to, you know, maybe around 75 to 100 grams a day on average, not this 150 or any crazy number that people are trying to get on other diets. And what's amazing is that not only do you not need very much protein, I mean, 13 to 15% isn't that much, but if you go just look at foods, like other foods besides meat and dairy and eggs, you'll see that they all have protein in them, and especially if you're on a whole foods-based diet where you're not stripping away the protein and the fibrous parts of, like, say, the pasta, you can get protein all over the place. So one great example of this is that if you look at a box of whole grain pasta, most of them are going to have somewhere between 12 and 15% of their calories coming from protein. So this food that we've always considered a carbohydrate food, like that surely must be devoid of protein, has exactly the amount that you need. So in other words, if you were to eat nothing but whole grain pasta all the time, granted, you'd have all kinds of nutritional and health problems, but protein wouldn't be your issue. So it's in everything from broccoli to kale to, as I mentioned, whole grain products and seeds. it's everywhere. It's just not that big a deal.
Yeah, we actually have a great song coming up at the end of the show, which I encourage you to listen to, that talks exactly about how much protein is in all different types of plant foods. So stay tuned for that. So the advice you give in your book on how to transition to a plant-based diet, it's not only useful for athletes, but definitely worthwhile for non-athletic people as well. And I would love you to share just some of this info with our listeners. For example, in getting started on a plant-based diet, you advocate the practice of forming habits. A lot of this is all psychological, right? So can you talk to us about some of the techniques people can use to start to form habits towards vegan eating so that it naturally becomes a part of their daily lifestyle?
Sure. And my experience is a great example, because when I just jumped into the diet that first time and thought that I was just going to go vegetarian or vegan then and there, I failed after a week because I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how you cook that way. I didn't know how you eat in restaurants or how you choose restaurants ahead of time. So what actually I did when I made it last was start the process and do it very, very gradually. So like I said, I stopped eating first the four-legged animals. And then in time, and when I was ready, stopped eating the two-legged animals, finally phased out fish, which was a zero-legged animal, and was left with only plants. So I think gradual is key in so much habit change. We always want to jump into something, especially when it's like animals, and you think, I just want to stop eating animals immediately because I feel so wrong about this. Now, I can respect that for sure, and I encourage you to still try it. But if you do fail, like I did that first time, then try it with a gradual approach. Just doing things gradually teaches your brain and body to get used to something so that it's not some huge shock. There are some other habit tips, too, that are more maybe for running. The idea of a trigger, that we very strongly associate one action with another if we habitually or repeatedly in our lives have something follow something else. So, for example, if you have a cup of coffee in the morning and then you automatically turn on the TV or pick up the paper, your body learns to associate drinking that coffee with picking up the paper or drinking that coffee with turning on the TV. Most of this happens unconsciously. But if you're trying, say, to start a fitness habit, one good thing you can do is have that trigger there and know that every time, maybe as soon as you walk in the door after work, you get out the door for your run. Or maybe as soon as you wake up, you step right into your shoes and go out for your run then. So having this little thing that's beforehand, which is known as a trigger or a cue, can kind of shorten the amount of time it takes for an activity to become a habit. With plant-based eating, it's a little bit harder to use the trigger idea, but what you can do is notice what the triggers are for your unhealthy eating. And like, if you have a problem where you start every week or so craving pizza or craving buffalo chicken wings or whatever it may be, you can notice, is there a certain trigger that is causing that? And then as long as you're aware of it, you can start to behave differently when it comes up or even take action so that trigger won't come up as often.
I like these tips. It's about being prepared and having a plan, and then you're set up for success instead of being set up for failure if you just don't have any which way to do it. I think also that making it easy in food preparation is also key to making the switch to a vegan diet. And I like that you talk about using some recipe staples to get you started and on track. So please tell us about some of these staples that you speak of in the book. There's smoothies, salads, soups, burritos, and why foods such as these are great to fuel a nutritious plant-based diet and also beneficial for athletes.
Right. So the reason that I chose those foods as the staples is because those are foods that are familiar to most people. Like, most people can imagine eating a burrito because they have done it all the time from Chipotle. And one great thing about a place like Chipotle is that nowadays you could, like when you switch to vegetarianism, just go there and get the burrito that is vegan instead of the one that has meat in it. Soups are very similar. You can cram all kinds of good healthy stuff into soups, greens, beans, all different vegetables. You can do that so that it's still a big hearty soup, but just don't put the meat in it or make it with vegetable stock instead of chicken broth. And it doesn't seem all that different from other foods. So these foods that I chose for the staples, and they are foods that I eat very often, are ones that are a lot like the foods that people are used to eating anyway. The smoothie and the salad, of course, are some that most people may not be eating every day, but I think people just sort of naturally can imagine themselves eating a smoothie and salad and don't think of those as disgusting foods or anything like that. To me, those are the two anchors in my diet. Mm-hmm. Every single day, I'll drink a smoothie in the morning and eat a salad in the afternoon. And the ingredients in these two things are actually very similar. Both involve leafy greens, both involve lots of nuts and seeds. The smoothie has a little bit more fruit in it, of course, usually a banana and some frozen berries. But I think of these two foods as basically the two small meals throughout the day that keep me on track. So as long as I eat those two foods every day, those two meals every day, I should say, it's hard to really go for much of a period, like be off track for too long. Certainly there are times when I'll eat a meal that is less than ideal. But, you know, when 3 hours later it's time to eat that salad, or if it's at nighttime, as soon as the next morning starts, I get back and eat that smoothie, I'm like back on track. And it's hard to just really go off onto a period where you're eating bad meal after bad meal when you have certain really healthy foods that are a constant part of your day.
So let's talk about specific foods to consume for training and race days. For a half or full marathon race day, for example, can you just go through some examples of what kinds of foods people should consume prior to, during, and after the race for optimal performance and recovery?
Sure. So for a full or half marathon, generally you want to try to wake up several hours before your race begins, like ideally 4 or 5 hours in advance, which isn't easy to do. And that's why it's worth rehearsing this basically on your long run days, because if you are training for those races and you're doing it correctly, then you'll be putting in a lot of runs that are kind of approaching the race distance. Use those opportunities as chances to basically rehearse what you're going to do on race day. Specifically, what I would do is eat a meal as soon as you get up. You can eat a little bit more of a starchy or substantial meal if you have 4 or 5 hours until your race. That could be kind of like a whole grain waffle type thing. I mean, that works well. This is one time when we're really not worried too much about processed grains and sugar. Like, those foods are actually somewhat helpful in a marathon or half marathon, and you actually don't want a whole lot of fiber or fat, even the healthy kind, just because those things can tend to cause digestive problems. So something sort of mild, like a waffles or a bagel, maybe with a little bit of almond butter on it. Again, not too much, because you don't want to go crazy with the fat. And then as the race gets closer, and as you have less time between your each successive meal and your race itself, you want to just be eating foods that are easier to digest and easier to handle. So let's say you only have 2 hours before your race. In that case, you want to be eating more just fruit. If you only have an hour before your race, really then you should start limiting it only to drinks. So fruits, sports drinks, either homemade or otherwise, if you don't have the chance to make something yourself, which is ideal. Fresh dates are a fantastic one that I eat, not just before a race, but during one as well. And then after, the very first thing you want to do is replenish your carbohydrate stores immediately after the race. Fruit, sports drinks, fruit juice, all that sort of stuff, yes, has lots of sugar, but that's what you're trying to replace immediately after. And then within the hour or two after that race, you want to eat a higher protein meal in. So it could be a beans and rice. It could be a very typical meal. It doesn't have to be some crazy protein shake or anything like that. But if you want to do that, that's absolutely fine. Just carbohydrate first and then protein later on.
So for some final athletic inspiration, in your book, you say that you used to hate running and that you're not a gifted runner. I don't believe that. And you say you also truly believe that if done correctly, just about anyone can learn to not only love running, but also to train themselves to run a half marathon, marathon, or even ultra marathon, which I find to be an astounding statement, but I'm willing to learn more. So please, we've got a minute here. In a nutshell, explain, how can that be accomplished for any average person?
Sure. So these sports you've mentioned, these are not 5Ks or 10Ks, where in order to excel, you need to be going at a pretty high intensity. These sports, something that once you can learn to slow down and learn to be okay with the fact that you're running really, really slowly, like at a conversational pace where you can carry on a conversation while you're running without a problem, that slow. And for some people, that's going to mean walking at the beginning, and that's totally fine. There's nothing at all wrong with that. Running doesn't have to be fast. But as you slow down, if you're used to running fast and you slow down by 2 minutes per mile, all of a sudden you can probably run twice as far as you've ever gone before, or at least several miles further. And then it's just a matter of increasing the distance you can go. And that's not some amazing athletic achievement. It's just about kind of getting your body used to it. Your body learns to run by running, surprise, and learning not to quit. You know, putting yourself through the 10-mile run on the weekend so that you can get that half marathon done. At the bigger distances, it's getting the 20 miles in so you can get the 26 miles done on the marathon day. But it's just about learning not to quit, getting out there and doing it day after day, even if it's at a very, very easy pace that doesn't ever feel hard.
Well, thank you so much for that, Matt. I have to say, just reading your website and your book this week, I have been inspired to maybe see about running my first half marathon. And you've got so much good information that's available there. So I look forward to reading more. Thank you for coming on the show today to speak about veganism for athleticism and tips on going vegan. I encourage our listeners to check out Matt's new book, No Meat Athlete, and his popular website by the same name, nomeatathlete.com. Thanks so much, Matt, and happy World Vegan Day.
Thank you, Allison and Matt, for that interview. Now I just wanted to give a super big thank you and shout out to our listener, Derek Smith, who called in to donate and become a member of Co-op Radio. You too can be like Derek if you call us now at 604-684-8494 or go online to cooperadio.org and donate in honor of Animal Voices. And if you call now, I will be there to answer the phone and I will sing you a special song.
Awesome. So you've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia. Please join us next week for another great show. That's November 8th. And we here at Animal Voices modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices. You can do so by signing up to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or you can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And you can also check out our website, animalvoices.org. As Jenny mentioned, it is our fall membership drive. So if you appreciate the work we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on topics of current animal issues and vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to Animal Voices at Co-op, because we really do rely on your donations on air. So to make a donation of $5, $10, $20, whatever you can afford, simply call us right now at 604-8494. That's 604-8494. And
you
Jenny will take your call.
There. 604-684-8494.
Yeah. Don't call that number with four numbers. It'll get you nowhere. So 604-684-8494. Or you can always just go to the website at cooperadio.org. We're closing the show with a great song called Where Do You Get Your Protein by Vegan Smythe. And so stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
Ever since I've been a vegan, it's been like a broken record, an irritating soundbite, looping round and round forever. Apples are 2% protein, bananas are 5% protein, oranges are 8% protein, and tomatoes are 19% protein.
Where do you get your protein?
Lettuce, 36% protein. Spinach is 50% protein. Potatoes are 18% protein.
Where do you get your protein?
Beans range from 20 to 58% depending on the type of bean. Seeds and nuts give us protein glutts while keeping our arteries clean. Broccoli's got a big 3-3.
33%.
Lentils have got a big 3-4.
34%.
Soybeans got the big 3-5. And the main thing is I'm alive. I'm a vegan and I'm actually still alive. OMG, LOL, WTF. Where do you get your protein? Shrooms, mush. Shrooms, mush. What about mushrooms, fun guy?
Mushrooms contain, as portion of total calories, 56% protein.
And in case you want to know about meat, the animal flesh that some people eat, well, beef can contain up to 40% protein. Way less than a kidney bean!
Where could you get your protein? Where could you get your protein?
I've had enough.